I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nickturn on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/be-here-now for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn on May 28th.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everyone. It's Raghu, and I'm doing a little bit of an intro this week to the podcast, which I don't normally do these days. It's with Pete Holmes, a good friend. And at one time over this year, actually, I have done various podcasts, but more chats, although I knew that they probably would see the light of day as a podcast, but around Ram Dass's passing and what it meant to different people. And I did this one with Pete, and I just came upon it when I was looking for something else, as usually the case. And since it's only a couple of months before, you know, we're in mid-October in terms of he left December 22nd. And by the way, we're going to have a really great event on that day. We're going to show this amazing film, Evolution of a Yogi, that was done when he was living at his father's farm in New Hampshire, where a bunch of us met him and went from there on to India when he left in 1970 in the late summer fall to go back to India. So we have that. We're going to have beautiful footage, putting something together from his time in Maui over the last 15 years. And then there's a great, this is kind of a co-production. I'm spieling this whole thing. I never intended to, but I am. There's a wonderful movie that a friend of ours in India, Jupna, put together of Neem Karoli Baba with all kinds of interviews and footage. And it's really sweet. So that's going to happen. So it's going to be a series of films that we're going to do on that day, because Ram Dass left on the 22nd of December. Maharaji's emergence, they call it in India, which is done by the moon cycle, is December 22nd. So happened on this first anniversary to be the same, which is weird. So I have been thinking about Ram Dass as it gets closer. And this chat I had with Pete, it was so beautiful. His relationship, the way he met Ram Dass, the teachings that he got, the friendship that he engendered with Ram Dass over the years was quite lovely. Lovely to hear and watch. Actually, we did a video of it. And so I'm pretty happy to present that for this mind-rolling podcast. But I do want to give it the characterization of the fact that this was specifically about Pete's relationship with Ram Dass. So I hope you enjoy it. I did mention that December 22nd thing, even though it's a couple of months away, more than. Boy, oh boy, what an event. And what since just happened since he, I'm so glad he left. I mean, he, of course, it would have been just beyond stress in terms of the shape that he was in to think that this COVID, which is we're all dealing with, that would have been a toughie. Not to mention the political stuff, not to mention the racial justice stuff. I mean, it has been something else, as I say. And I guess we're just all doing the best we can. We're here at Love Serve Remember Foundation, my other hat, as director, just trying to get, I mean, the stuff that we're finding of Ram Dass is extraordinarily spot on for now, even though he might have talked about some of this stuff 20, 30 years ago. So everyone keep, as the British would, a stiff upper lip here, and let's have some wise hope, which it was the name of this retreat that we did, a virtual retreat at the end of August. If those of you who hadn't perhaps seen it or participated in it, we are going to run it again because it had such great information and concert with Krishnadas and Trevor Hall and amazing, amazing people involved, from Roshi Halifax to Sharon Salzberg to Bob Thurman to Annie Lamott, Valerie Carr. I mean, it was an event for sure. Nina Rao did Chalices. Just fabulous. There you go. So here it is. This is a Pete and his whole relationship with Ram Dass on Mind Rolling on the Be Here Now Network. So I do want to get from you a bunch of stuff just about Ram Dass, your personal thing with him, so we can include it in this book. But
yeah, well, I'm honored.
I did a podcast, and, you know, I introduced these podcasts, and I always remember you going, yeah, no, I've heard it. Nah, I heard that one. Nah, there's nothing new, you know. I'm finding, I got to know more than you. I think in terms of I've heard more, because I've been around longer, right?
I'm so happy to hear you're still uncovering stuff you haven't heard.
Yeah, I don't know if you, there's a great podcast, did it just go up? It's the last podcast that with Ram Dass. It's called Science and Spirituality. Okay. He was interviewed by a man named Amit Goswami, who was a physicist. And it was just spectacular. Nothing you've ever heard before.
Really?
Yeah, you would dig that.
As a show business person, so I don't want to sound like I'm putting down what Ram Dass did. I actually just think I appreciate it in a different way, is that we have bits. Comedians have bits. If you interview me about comedy, there's going to be certain things. If you interview me about any topic that I talk about a lot, I'm going to have certain things, certain routines that I roll into. And I identify those when I listen to RD. And when he starts improvising or going into something that he's never said before, it's a real thrill for me. I get really, really excited. Mm. Or when he repeats it and you see how he changes it a little bit. I see him do that a lot. Which makes me really, he'll make a story faster. He'll make a story slightly different. It's a living, breathing thing. His message was dependent on who was listening. Just like the way that the Bible changes, depending on who the audience is, the storyteller would change a detail to sort of hook them and get them, get their juices flowing.
Yeah. It's also what, whatever mood he might've been in that moment. Sometimes he's very deep and wow, you know, or very stoned or a little bit more, Harvard professorial or, you know, he's got a lot of different,
it's so funny. It's funny that you mentioned the weed thing, because when I saw him last, we talked a little bit about weed and mentioned some joke about like a certain, like someone would give him a joint and he'd say, that's lecture strength. Like meaning it was good. Yeah, it was good enough to lecture on. And when I think that he would lecture while stoned, I'm just blown away. One, I can understand the benefit. Maybe it would help him get out of his own way and let Maharaji sort of flow through. But the his recall and his ability to read and his ability to listen to questions and stuff, I'm like, that is not how I am when I'm stoned. I can't stop singing and dancing and laughing at myself, and I go on weird tangents. He was very, very focused. But if you listen carefully, as I do, whenever he talks about weed, he seemed to, when he was a younger man, have a conflicted relationship with it, because he would say, oh, it makes food so good, it makes music so good, it makes life so good. But then the next day I sit down to meditate and my frontal lobes are fried. And I'm like, that's so interesting. I say this not to point a finger at RD at all, but I see myself in that. I'm one of these guys that when I'm stoned, I'm like, this is the greatest thing in the world. And then the next day I can't quite find the words I'm looking for. And I think he might have been, I could be projecting, but he might have had that same sort of like, which is it? Do we want to feel good all the time, or do we want to really have like a diamond precision understanding of complex ideas? I think he danced between the two of those, from what I can tell.
And that's the beauty I tell people who I'm talking to these days, you know, when they're recollecting him and so on. And I say, the not the greatest, but certainly one of the greatest things was hearing him being so honest about everything. And my first reaction was, oh God, it's okay. I'm not going to be killed by God right now. I'm okay. Right. You know, that kind of thing.
That's what made him such a remedy for me, was I came from a tradition that, of course, any tradition filled with humans, we're going to have the same basic issues, the same basic doubts and fears and shames. And to have a spiritual person who spoke of them so honestly and without, you know, one of my favorite Ram Dass things that he's ever said is, he's like, everything is all lawful until it comes to you. Like, I can look at the world, I can even look at the pandemic that we're in, and I'm like, I can see how this hopefully will lean the consciousness of the earth in a positive arc, you know? I can see that. I can see it in my family. I can see it in my enemies. I can go like, oh, they're just doing, like Ram Dass's thing about trees, they're just doing what they need to do to survive, to get love. They might have gone inward and then that became a narcissist later, but like it was a defense mechanism, and I understand and I can love that. But then as soon as it's me, I'm like, you piece of shit. And he called that out. He was like, oh, it's all one except you. It's like you, it's like you're the only player. Like, get over yourself. That's like, you are also unfolding lawfully.
Yeah, it's like the Frank Zappa song. I don't know if you know, It Can't Happen Here.
That's hilarious. I don't know it, but it feels right.
Oh, you know, you're talking about Ram Dass getting stoned sometimes in lectures. One time, I was in a car. It was in Boston, and it was me and Rameshwar Das and him. Krishnadas had already gone there. And so he just, we're on the way. I mean, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes to get there. He pulls out like a big fat doobie. Okay. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm a hippie forever, right? This is like, we had just been back from India. It's like 74, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
And I can handle, fuck, it's nothing, you know, this is nothing. I've been doing this. I don't know what this shit was, but the three of us got way out there. Yeah. And then we go on stage. I'm playing drums for Krishnadas. And I'm thinking, how in the world are you going to talk now? This is not possible, right? Yeah. I can't put one foot in front of the other. And generally, that didn't happen. I'm a good stoner that way. I mean, I was able to, like, I ran a radio station, you know, that way. So he's on and it's just flowing like you've never heard anything flow. Meanwhile, I'm playing drums. So, you know, it goes back and forth. He's not singing, I'm playing drums. And then at one point, Krishnadas looks at me and he goes like that. And I look down. Blood is everywhere. My wedding ring had crunched into my finger. Oh, and wow. I was so wasted that I didn't know it was happening.
Oh, my God.
And blood everywhere. And I'm smacking the drum. And Ram Dass is talking. I'll never forget that.
Oh, so my God. That is a good one. Yeah, I sometimes wonder, you know, RD tells stories about taking ungodly or, I don't know, very deeply godly
ungodly, amounts. Yes. No, ungodly.
Amounts of LSD and going into the Gulf of Mexico at midnight and getting stung by jellyfish and or taking pills and he doesn't even know what they are. Like he really had like a, it's my consciousness, I'll do with it what I want attitude. And I sometimes wonder, like, I don't think I could have kept up with that. Like later Ram Dass is such a better Ram Dass for me. I'm not very adventurous when it comes to those types of things. But I like where it took him. I think about those times when he was a younger man and really going wild.
There's a lot of courage involved there. I talked to Lama Suryadas the other way, exuberance. He had a lot of exuberance.
Yeah, that's a good way to put
he
it.
Went into, yeah, he would go into a room for a week with as much psychedelics as you could possibly imagine. And they would say, well, let's see what happens. We just keep, who would do that? You know, who would get in a plane and fly alone on acid?
Yeah, that's insane. That's
a bad
idea.
there is something. Yeah, there's a pioneerish spirit somehow there. I'm not quite sure.
But I mean, it's funny sometimes when I'm taking psychedelics, I'll say to myself, "You're afraid to do this, but you'll one day have to jump off the high dive of death, right? Like, how little do you trust God, the universe, yourself that you can't even do like a 6 or 8 hour alteration of reality when we all have to do the cannonball into the abyss. So Ram Dass's courage, one of my favorite stories that I was actually in Maui doing a corporate show. So it was sort of like a bad scene if I was going to use the 60s language. It was a weird trip, man, because it was like one of those shows where you're very friendly, very positive. I was happy to do it. But like, it's a bit surreal. You're performing for people that you don't really understand. It's some sort of sales conference. And it doesn't, let's just put it this way. It doesn't feel very earthy. It doesn't feel very spiritual. It's very like, and now for the top salespeople, some guy you don't know. And I come out, it's very like, you sort of feel like a little bit of a prostitute-y feel, like you come out and do something, and it was just weird. So I got to, the show was actually fine, but I got to visit Ram Dass. I texted Dasima and I said, I'm in Maui. I mean, when does that happen? I'm on Maui. Is it possible to just come by? And she said, yeah, come by. And we had just maybe an hour or two together, but I was sitting on the couch in the living room, and he was presented, rolled out, and he sat there, and it was really, really cool. I didn't write about this in my book. He was silhouetted by the sun, like the sun was behind his head. It was a setting sun, so he was just all black. I couldn't even really see him, and we didn't do anything. He didn't say anything other than, I think, just this. He was like, just this, just this, just this. And man, that feeling that he was the conduit of that Maharaji ooey-gooey goodness. I mean, I don't mean to put it in such crude, basic terms, but like he was like, okay, it's one visit. I'm just going to go there. Like the private retreats, we'd go to that ooey gooey place on the third day. This was like, we only have a couple hours. Let's just go there together and now. Fuck it. Yeah. Fuck it. You have an hour? He gave me the special. He was like, here's the special. And after we just had this incredible, and other people were there. It wasn't private or anything, but I just felt like I'm wearing like a snowsuit filled with warm love. And not because of something he said, just because of a presence that we were sharing. At one moment, I remember looking at his eyes and his pupils looked like dinner plates. It was like a really crazy, again, I couldn't see him very well, but I got a glimpse of his eyes and they looked almost like otherworldly. And then Dasi comes over and we're out of time. And, you know, then you sort of, you have that weird sensation of going back to normal talking. You just kind of jumped into the pool of love unexpectedly, which is even crazier and more special. And then you go back to like, well, thank you so much for having me. And then Dasi goes, yeah, we almost lost him a week ago, which I had heard about. There had been like a health scare. And then I said, that's scary. And she said, yeah, we were all scared. We were all scared. And so Ram Dass, who was very sort of meek that day physically, I didn't even know he was listening to us, but he tugged on Dasi's shirt, the bottom of her shirt, and insisted that she look at him. And she looked at him and he goes, not me. I wasn't scared. She was like, we were all scared. And he goes, not me. So that is that cannonball into the abyss. The guy that's like, where could I go that God and Maharaji and awareness is not? Like that's, I believe it's in the Psalms. It's, I make my bed in the depths and you're there. I go to the heavens and you're there. One of the things that Ram Dass helped me realize is that like, if you're experiencing it, God is there because God is awareness. You know what I'm saying? Like this opens up religion in such a bigger way. It's not about a clan or a tribe or a group or a system of beliefs. If there are other planets, which undoubtedly there are, with other species of human-like things, that is also God. Like wherever it is, there is consciousness, and that is what Ram Dass helped me see and call God, which is really, really exciting. Eckhart Tolle says that. He says, the opposite of death is birth. Life has no opposite. There's that idea that like there can't be nothing because there would have to be something there to see that it was nothing. And if something was there to see that it was nothing, then God is there. That helps you appreciate songs like, Stand By Me, you know, that song, even if the mountains should tumble and fall, I won't be afraid as long as you stand by me. If you think of that song as like, no matter what happens to you, God, consciousness is closer than close. It's looking at your eyes. It can't betray you. You can be in hell. You can be in heaven. You could be on death's door. If you are feeling betrayed, you can't be betrayed because the feeling that is noticing the betrayal is infinite, eternal, loving presence itself.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever told you this particular story, which relates exactly to what you're talking about. I was once, one of my favorite teachers is Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, a great, great Tibetan Lama. I must have mentioned him to you before. I have to believe I did. And if I didn't, I'm going to send you a couple of titles for you to get. He's extraordinary. But he's like, take no prisoners. You know, he's one of those, no fucking around, you know? What are you going to do? He's like, you're going to waste your life getting attached? You're going to waste your life just believing that, you know, there's something you're carrying forward when you leave? And the reality is that after a few weeks, people are not going to be thinking about him, about you, whoever it is, whatever the attachment. You know, get with it now, buddy. It was, you know, of course, nothing like that, but it was very, very. So I happened to be speaking to Krishnadas. I said, and he said, oh, and the other thing was a little bit scary. He's saying, when you go into those bardos, it ain't all pretty. Okay. It ain't all about finding your soul pot. He didn't say that, but you know, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
You know, there are some, you know, the, whatever your attachments may still be, they manifest and, you know, scary stuff can happen. So you better really work on this now.
Yeah.
So I told this to Krishnas and he said, well, I will say that we have a little bit of an advantage. Now, this was just, you know, this, if I don't know if I'd ever put this out or whatever, but because it's too weird. But he did say, let's put it this way. The grace that we have had with a being like this extends to the fact he actually said, I will never let go of your hand. And so it's just a matter of working on guru yoga, where you put the image of Buddha or your guru or Christ, whatever, it's all the same, doesn't matter. And as you are going out into the initial bardo, that is emerging of that with the image of it through your, it's a practice, a Tibetan practice.
Right, right.
And he's, and in our case, hold on for dear life to that blanket.
Yeah.
And remember, I will never let you go. In relation to this crazy thing, you know, with Dilgo Khyentse.
If you're afraid, the thing that's experiencing fear is the presence of divine life and light, like we just said. You know what I'm saying? You getting lost in it is the problem, but remembering that it's pretty trippy. It's pretty trippy.
Yeah, really. So do you have a first remembrance of, you know, you've heard my story a million times of meeting Ram Dass the first time and how I was completely embraced by him, just in the way you exactly described in that experience, being in his house and you just sat down, you were just in it, right?
Yeah.
It's
unmistakable.
Unmistakable. And so, but do you remember the first encounter that might not have been physical, but you heard a talk or something about what just sort of, you know, did that thing?
I mean, first of all, I do want to say that is when Ram Dass passed, I was, there were a lot of feelings. A lot of it was relief and joy that we even had Ram Dass and that we knew Ram Dass and that we got to learn from him and share satsang with him. Then selfishly, I was like, it's that honey avalanche feeling that selfishly I was like, oh man, I sort of lost my hookup. I can hear Ram Dass saying, come on, man, I told you there is no hookup. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, that being said, come on, Ram Dass, you know you were my hookup to a certain extent. Yeah. Like, well, yeah. I could sit
with human,
him.
Human. We are human.
Yes. And he helped and he opened that door. And I think that's some of his caregivers told me that was a big reason why he stuck around and why he wanted to stick around wasn't to, like, you know, eat another ice cream sandwich. It was so that he could keep the door open for Maharaji. My first experience was. And I told him this, actually, that I read Be Here Now. I think I did mushrooms for the first time. I was the same age as Ram Dass, which I love all the similarities. They mean something to me, whether or not they mean anything to anyone else. Mm. But we're both Aries. We're both from Boston. We're both achievers. I've heard people say that Ram Dass is an enthusiast. I'm not sure. I tend to think that he was an achieving enthusiast, meaning he had that upward mobility, as he always said. He wanted to be the Harvard professor. He wanted to be the good boy. And I definitely had all of that. And then when I was 31 and he was 31, we took mushrooms. So then I couldn't stop talking about it with everybody. I'm a kind of a proselytizer in that way. I'll discover a movie and I'll tell somebody about it. And they're like, I've seen that. I'm like, well, why didn't you tell me about it? Like, what are you doing? You knew that. So you can imagine when
I'm
right
there with you, man. I mean, that's one thing we really have in common.
Well, then you understand my frustration. It's a playful frustration, but like, I started telling people what happened to me on mushrooms, and I didn't take a huge dose or anything. I took the perfect dose for my first time, and I had what I didn't realize until later. I didn't call it a God experience at the time, but I had like a unitive consciousness. I'm in the tree, I'm that bird, I'm everything. No fear, no anxiety, all love. But not just words, a profound in the marrow of my bones, felt at home in the universe for the very first time and felt it springing from inside of me. So I started telling everybody about it. And surprisingly, most people that I told, they were like, yeah, I've done mushrooms when I was in college, or I did it there, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I can't believe you weren't talking about it. So I flapped my gums enough that I think it was actually an agent, like a showbiz agent, that was like, have you read Be Here Now? And he sent it to me as a PDF as a joke, because the joke was, it's like a mushroom trip book. It's like a book that if you read it, it's like a mushroom trip. But it wasn't sent to me like, this guy will blow your mind. It wasn't sent mean-spirited, but it wasn't sent, it was like, check out this craziness, like a gag. And I looked at it and I eventually bought it. And I told Ram Dass this. I was like, it was a coaster. I just put drinks on it. I thought it was, I didn't understand what he was talking about. It was a coaster. And what I loved about RD was he thought that was really funny. Like I never felt like I had to put on airs with him and be like, oh, Be Here Now. I was like, yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't understand it. I thought it was so confusing because I didn't have his voice in my head. Be Here Now is transcribed. You can actually get some of the lectures, the actual lectures that became the book on iTunes and stuff. But once you have his cadence and his attitude and his transmission, his frequency in your head, then you can read it. But I always tell people, do not start with Be Here Now. I did. It did nothing for me. Then later I did Duncan's podcast, and Duncan had a photo of Maharaji that he had some bananas in front of as a offering that I thought was so weird. And obviously Duncan is just like he's sort of like a Mad Hatter kind of character in that way that I, like Ram Dass sort of can threaten my squareness. Duncan also would threaten my squareness. So he's telling me about this guy, but he's also telling me, like, I think this might be for you, because I had Christ leanings and I had now I had this new psychedelic leaning. So I downloaded Experiments in Truth, which is a collection of talks. And I think I was on a delayed flight or a long flight. I fly, or, you know, before this, I used to fly a lot. And I think just out of sheer boredom, like no Wi-Fi on the plane, no movies on the plane, I'm just in a, you know, a middle seat towards the back, I just throw on Experiments in Truth, track one. That's what I tell people to start with. Shout out to Sounds True, and you're a great curator of RD as well, and maybe you helped with this. But they start with the most sort of basic, if you like this, you're going to like pretty much everything I do. And he does the dial on the side of the head. But he also explains attractions and aversions. And I started writing down on like I wasn't a barf bag, but it was something that was in the seat back. I'm just writing down. And then I realized it would have been easier to write down what I didn't think was important, because I was writing everything down. Like I would pause it and then rewind it. And I realized I was just transcribing it. I was transcribing the entire lectures. But, you know, I had never heard someone say that when you are adverse to something, you're also giving it energy. You're letting it get you by pushing it away, that you need to find ways to separate from your mind to go into what the Christians would call your true self, your soul. The same thing Ram Dass would say, you need to get into the witness. And that just lit the fuse. It was over for me, meaning I was hooked. I was like, I'm in. I'm totally in. I never thought I would be in. I sent it as I proselytize, I sent it to everybody. I realized that not everybody was there. Like some Rubik's Cube inside me was ready for the message. I think it's just like anybody that hears Ram Dass will be turned on. It wasn't that. It was the psychedelics. It was my divorce. It was the suffering. It was the heart opening. It was all, it was my age. It was time. And the soil was ripe and the seeds went in and I was like, this is my dude. And then Duncan told me about the retreats and I went to a retreat and I met Ram Dass for the first time. And this is in my book. But I told him the compliment that I saved for him was I said, Ram Dass, you're my favorite comedian. Because I thought that would mean something to him. But in the book, I sort of talk about that, like, sort of in a, not sort of, in a beautiful way that didn't really matter. It didn't matter what shiny compliment I had saved for him or that I would put quotes of his in my TV show. There was no, you know, he could smell my specialness addiction a mile away. And I was like, you know, I put you in my TV show. And he's like, he just loved me for absolutely no rational reason. He loved me because he was looking through this meat puppet and seeing the inner light and just going, oh, where have you been my whole life? I'm finally running into this one again. Mm. It was really lovely.
I mean, it's really no different than Ram Dass sitting in front of Maharaji, just first of all, blown away that Maharaji knew about his mother dying of spleen cancer and all that. And then realizing, oh shit, he knows all my thoughts, you know, oh my God, I'm the worst thing that ever lived. And then looking up, it's all okay. It's all okay. You know, you're the somebody that you are displaying, it's okay. That's a huge ass thing. And that's what happened to you. The somebody you're displaying, you know, whatever, is okay. You know, it's that's not right. Okay. You better cut that shit out, man, because you're just, right. You know.
Right. Well, that's what I would get in church. People would say, how can you be a comedian and a Christian? That was something that people would just say casually to me. And I was just like, are you so lost in my exterior? You know what I mean? Like, is that really what we're doing? You just see a tall Christian man. Like, don't we see a deeper reality and a bigger dance and a bigger game here? I what you just said made me think, I believe in Ram Dass's stories, literally. I think they're supposed to be taken literally. If you look at them as a metaphor, the only reason to do that is to give yourself personal meaning. The way that Ram Dass felt with Maharaji is hard to explain unless there is some bells and whistles that we can understand. It helps the transmission to say, he read my mind. He did this. He would bilocate. All of those miracles are so much, they're sort of like Star Wars level miracles. They're fun miracles. And I think RD would say, the real miracle is what we're saying is that honey avalanche. The problem is it's not that great of a story for me to be like, you'd be with him and you would just feel calm and want. People are like, get out of here. What is this? The O network? Get out of my face. So you need to like hook people. LSD does the same thing. It's like grab somebody by the collar a little bit so you can really, any means necessary, let's get into their heart. And I think Maharaji's grace gave him some really great stories because he needed to spin some yarns. I don't mean untrue things. I mean, he needed attention getters to get to the real point.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when that story of the mother's spleen, which wasn't mind reading because Ram Dass was not thinking about that. It happened to him 2 days earlier and he got there. And all he was thinking about, holy shit, they're going to rip me off for this bus. The Jeep, they're going to rip that Jeep off and it's not mine. What am I, you know, he was KK Shah, his Indian brother, who I think you may have met one time. I'm not sure, but
I never met KK.
You never, man. Anyhow, he used to say, and KK would never say a dark thing about anybody. And when I went to, when we were alone, I said, what was Ram Dass really like? Like when he got sent home to your house after that first meeting with Neem Karoli Baba, he said, very haughty, very haughty.
Haughty?
Haughty.
Hot.
Not hot, H-O-T-T-I, H-A-U-G-H-T-Y. Hottie.
Very hottie.
Yeah, arrogant, oh my arrogant. God. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love that.
And then it all got played out. And the way it got played out was spectacular for us Westerners, that it was played out that way, that he could play out his life, Ram Dass, with such honesty. You know, mm-hmm. It was just Jesus. By the way, I think I was just saying I actually, what happened, there's a talk. We've been putting out stuff around the pandemic, right? Whatever we can do. Ram Dass has so much stuff that's so dead on, you know, that can help people. And this particular one was around chaos. And so I did a thing last night with somebody with the Ram Dass Fellowship, you know, a bunch of 150 people or something online. And so I'm listening to this. I really didn't hear it before. Somebody else picked the thing, and I'm like, you know, I'm too busy. I can't listen to it. But now I had to. I'm sitting there listening to it. And then I started doing, because it reminded me when you went on the plane with Experiments in Truth and started, I think I'll write down things that are interesting to me. You end up transcribing.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there listening to this thing. I have a page of notes, like at this state, like, you know, and some of it was, actually, it was a little tough for me, to be honest. Just, you know, it's not like when I'm with people and we're listening to something or watching something of his, you know, and here's one thing he said, not being awakened is a real addiction. I love that. I was like, wow. And then I thought, I had the impulse, oh yeah, I got to call him. I'd call him and I'd go, Ram Dass, you know, you said this a long time ago and it's so great. And he would laugh and, you know, we'd have a big laugh about, you know, old Ram Dass and now Ram Dass and, you know, and he loved the fact that, you know, he could see the pithy things that he came up with that out of the blue that were just encapsulated it all in one moment, you know?
Yeah.
But it was
I love that. And that is very sad. I'm sorry for that loss. Yeah. It's very sweet, though.
Yeah, it's not. That other, you know how he used to say, a human can be on more than one plane of consciousness at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happening. You know me, I'm not very woo-hoo-y to say that Ram Dass is with me every, you know, but I am constantly thinking about him, you know. I'm constantly thinking when I get this barrage of mail that now I have to answer, so to speak, you know, with people with problems and whatever I can do, I do. But I'm running it through his brain, through his mind, you know. And I can see myself going, well, that's a stupid-ass question. Get that delete, and then I go to the hit that can't do it. It's like yeah. Peter Sellers in How I Learned to Love the Bomb, you know, where he's I can't do it.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, no, I because he and I do consider us like earth body friends. We weren't close in the way that you were by any means. So when he left the body, he sort of, for people like me, the feeling was he became more, to use a nutrition term, he became more bioavailable to me. Mm-hmm. So there's photos of Ram Dass. I'm looking at one right now, all over the house. And whenever I'm putting Leela down, that is just when I feel like he shows up. But that's a very deeply spiritual time for me, to hold a baby in a dark, quiet room. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we chant, and that's just like the intensity of that sort of increased. Who cares if that checks out by whatever metric we want to run it through? My experience is that, like, when he was liberated, I felt like, I've said this before, but that the sugar was stirred into the tea and it just dissolved and went everywhere. And when I'm in the room, you know how a dark room sort of looks like sugar in tea. You can see the specks. I'm like, we say, I love you, Baba. Like, I'll have Leela. There's a photo of he and I. And I go, who's that? And she goes, Dada. And I go, who's that? And she goes, Baba. Mm-hmm. And I go, can you say love you? And we say it to Maharaji and all these things. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I feel like saying this. I'm not necessarily inducting Leela into this. It's not like something that I'm going to keep track of and be like, well, make sure you, you know, say your Maharaji, I love yous. When she's 13, she's as free as she is. But for now, there's very sweet, infinite co-parent love. And I feel RD in that in a big way. And there's a photo of him touching her when she was 4 weeks old, I think. Oh. Maybe 4 or 6 weeks old. We brought her to Maui. She actually got a cold. We were sort of like bad parents. But I mean, she got to sit with Ram Dass and he put her hand on her and Dasi was like, bless her, Ram Dass. And Ram Dass said, she's blessing me, which I just thought was such a beautiful thing. Such a lovely man.
Yeah, what a great moment. Wow.
Yeah.
So this thing, maybe just to hear from, reaction to some of these things that he was talking. I mean, it's just mind-blowing from this talk, which was from God knows when, 25 years ago or 30, who knows, that was so apropos to what's going on now. He said, people with even the tiniest bit of equanimity, they're going to help coalesce everyone else who is in any way lost. And they're going to create a safe comfort zone, right? And look what we're in right now. I thought that was so apropos. I was on the talking to Duncan the other day and just said, I go for a walk. And people, not a lot of people because of where I am, but people come by and they're all directly doing eye contact. Hi. And it's a hi with, hey, wow, we're all in this. It's a common, connected, deep wisdom of what's going on in so many ways that doesn't need much dialogue. Right. And that is, I think, and Ram Dass talking about it, even with the tiniest bit of equanimity. So the more that we actually can express that just in that look, which, and by the way, going back to this thing with Ram Dass, like you say to me, well, you spent all that time with him and you were close to him. I wasn't any closer to him than you were. When we're talking about that moment, to me, the most expressive part of what he's given to everybody is the way that he was totally in the moment. Like, I love your story of just coming in, say, oh, I had an hour, let's, and he pops downstairs and nothing happens. Just that moment, what did he say? Just this?
He was just going, just this.
Just this is what it's all about. And I that know. Just this. It crosses all boundaries of people that knew him a long time, people that only met him 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's later Ram Dass to me. I know he had both, but because of the stroke, he lost in his brilliant, the thing that hooked me was his brilliance and his show busy, and I say that as a compliment, his comedian-like ability to hold an audience and speak and improvise and be wonderful, then just became a man who could transmit it with two words. I mean, it's kind of as good as it gets. He got to ride it both ways. He got to be the amazing mouthpiece for something so special. And then later he got to be the body piece, if that makes sense. He got to just be a lump of it.
A lump of it.
I don't mean that because he couldn't move. I just mean he was so dense. He was
dense
and heavy, like amber. He was like a dollop of amber. Really special.
And but one thing with you though is, not to get too personal, but from when we first met, when you first came over to the retreat in Maui, which is, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
See, you were a lot of fun then. Then you turned out to be not so fun anymore. You liked all of us. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you mean like a wild card?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. There, it wasn't easy for anybody that this is helpful to. There's a lot of resistance to this sort of thing. You can get afraid that you're just trading one set of beliefs for the same set of beliefs with a different vocabulary. I make the joke in my book that Val made the joke that it's like we had Jesus, now we have Maharaji, and she jokingly called him Maharaj Jesus. and then you had Saint Paul, and now you have Ram Dass. You know what I mean? You had the brilliant minds that articulated the messages of these, although Paul never met Jesus, but you know what I mean? You have the apostle that went out and built the church and all that sort of stuff. And then instead of singing sort of contemporary Christian songs, now we're singing kirtan. And then, so at the beginning, there's this, it really does feel like putting yourself in a furnace. It's a good furnace, but there's like a melting and a refining thing. And there's a lot of fear and there's pain. I always think of Zach Leary. He sat with me on the beach and he really made me feel normal for, why should you be having doubts if all you're doing is hanging out with a bunch of hippies in chunky necklaces and wearing Crocs? Shouldn't you just be like, this is lovely? But you're like, are we all mad? Like, is another Croc going to drop? Is there something that I have to buy? Or, you know, are you going to give me some weird creation myth that I have to swear by or I won't be in the group? And then you realize that it really is as simple as being love and working on the quality of your spacious, open consciousness and experiencing infinity right now. Just this is such a profound message. It's kind of the message in the whole thing, because what is this? I took some LSD recently. And I was like, I said to God or whatever, to this, I said, is there anything you need to tell me? And it went, this, meaning your life is, I have a quote above my desk. It says, God comes to us disguised as our lives. Paula D'Arcy said that. And Ram Dass says, the next message is whatever is in the moment. This is the message. We see it as an office or a CVS or a restaurant or whatever it might be. But it's actually, you're mistaking the message for a location or a person or a situation. That was the excitement of learning what karma yoga was and learning to use. One of the things Ram Dass said to me was, he goes, I love my anger. And I laughed at that. But he had that appreciation for every aspect of himself. And he saw everything that was as the unfolding of whatever was needed to happen for his awakening. Okay. Yeah. And that's the complete opposite that I came from, which was willpower Christianity, which is Richard Rohr calls it. It's just like, don't think of a pink elephant. And then in floats Ram Dass going like, oh boy.
So we could call this entry into this book, just this.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's a better title. It's the working title for the thing now is Remarkable Encounters with Ram Dass. It's too grandiose, this remarkable encounter. I'm not liking it as I talk to you now. Just this is kind of poetic and great, but at least this chapter will be just this.
I like that. I will say that Richard Rohr, who I love very deeply, who also said something that made me think of what you said about Ram Dass saying, it's not being awake is a big addiction. It reminded me of Richard Rohr said, I just heard him say it today. He goes, religion is a great place to hide from God. And I was like, that gives me the chills. Because as long as you go to the service, you can stay an egomaniac, racist, whatever, because you're just using it as leverage to be right. But Richard Rohr has a book called Just This. I actually read it every morning. But it's a good chapter name. I'm glad that we're telling that story, because I was going to tell you the one of when I went on my private retreat. But the story where because what really blew me away was on those private retreats on the third day, that was when he sort of, I don't know how he did this, but he threw it into third gear. And it was always on the third day that he'd be like, Maharaji is here. But he didn't even have to say it because you felt it. But in the Just This story, he did that in 10 seconds. It was, it was a whole 3-day retreat in 10 seconds. It was really remarkable. And then I tell so many people the not me story, that he wasn't afraid, because I fully believed him in that moment, that he was like, I mean this, like, I'm not afraid.
Not me,
I know you're afraid that I'm going to die. I am not afraid.
Really, so you were going to, I know, and I've heard you tell this, and I think it's in the book, that your experience on the private retreat, maybe just recount it a little, so, because it would be good probably.
Well, the real finale of it, there's a lot of it, and you don't need my permission. And by the way, I'm so sorry, I forgot to thank you in the special thanks of my book. I think I've already
apologized. Oh my God, you did?
I think the editor was like, who do you want to thank? And it was like a fast thing. And I really regret that I didn't thank you, because you were so great with those quotes. But that being said, if you want to use any part of my book, it's the last chapter. You have my permission. But because there's a lot of different parts to it. But the best part was the first time I sat with him, we mostly... My attitude was, I've listened to Ram Dass speak so much. I could ask him about free will. I could ask him about, you know, karma. I could ask him about whatever. But there's so much content. I was like, I almost had this, it was almost like polity. I didn't want to bother him and make him like remember some lesson or some quote. And I just wanted to sit with him. I just wanted to hang out. And the second time I sat with him, we would chant, and it was very beautiful, and it was very almost paternal. It was like just hanging out with a baby, and I was the baby, or we were babies. I don't know, but we would sit and we would gaze, and I have Jeremy Hoffield's painting of RD right over here, and that was the Ram Dass that I was looking at, was with the blanket behind him. And we would stare and just, you know, connect. He would, you know, it's a soul to soul, as I know he did with other people. But that was the game we were playing. We were like, can we look past the Pete-ness and the Ram Dass-ness and just look at each other as light looking into light? And just get lost in that. And I was like, absolutely. As somebody who makes his living trotting out my false self, my ego, and presenting it to people for their delight. I think that's a positive thing to do with an ego. But I get so much time with my ego. I was really ready to just have somebody look at me just as living spirit. And I felt so safe to do it with him. And it was completely unexpected, and nothing like this had ever happened before. But his face changed in real time. Like, I kept having to sort of shake my head like Daffy Duck in a cartoon. I would literally shake my head because I didn't know what was happening. I couldn't trust my eyes. I think it's important to note that I wasn't on drugs. I'd like to say I hadn't done drugs in a long time leading up to this. It wasn't some sort of flashback. It was my mind shut off, the part of my brain that prioritizes and constructs reality. The same thing happens on a hallucinogen, but that happened in the stillness that we created together. And I saw childhood Ram Dass. I saw kind of the classic hippie Ram Dass. And then I saw old Ram Dass, and I saw dead Ram Dass. I saw some scary Ram Dasses. I saw corpse Ram Dass. I saw deformed Ram Dass. I saw it all. I saw from baby to corpse. It was all happening on his face. But what really, really blew my mind was that Ram Dass does not look like my dad, I'd like to point out. And he became my dad, like, which is, I think I say in the book, struck me by how much he looked like my dad. And I was also struck by the psychological obviousness of the hallucination. I was like, my spiritual father looking like my actual father. Like, you ever get that feeling that as psychological beings, we're so obvious and we're so exposed, it's almost embarrassing? This story is a little bit like that. I was like, what did my psyche want and need in that moment? I had all of this love for him, and it literally manifested him in a blood way, which was very, very trippy. And if you'll forgive me, Raghu, I'll tell you this one too. The last time I saw him, I think I told you this. He loves sweets so much, and I loved him, and I love him so much that I would, the first day I went, they were having cookies. And I said, can I bring Ram Dass, like the other half of this cookie or half a cookie? And Matthew was like, oh my God, he'd love you. He'd love it. And I went up just to say hello, not a formal sit down, but just to say, hey, I'm here. I gave him the cookie, and he ate it like he eats a cookie, like Ram Dass eating a cookie. He's closing his eyes and he's just becoming the cookie, and he's and he's really enjoying it. And again, I'm an achiever and I'm a performer and I'm a specialness junkie and a bit of a power junkie. Not as bad as everyone else in Los Angeles, but pretty bad. So of course I go like, well, my great teacher, Ram Dass, loves sweets. I'm going to bring him another sweet. So on the last day, I bring him an ice cream sandwich. Govinda had to go to the grocery store, and he brought me with him. And I saw these little ice cream sandwiches, and I was like, that's perfect for Ram Dass. And they were very small. To give you an idea, I think there were 10 in the box. I ate 9, and I brought him one. And I put on a little plate. And I kept going back and forth in my head. I was like, is this another ego trip? Am I just doing what I do, what Pete does, and trying to be special and trying to impress him and trying to, oh, look how good I am. I brought you an ice cream sandwich. And at the last second, I was like, fuck it, get over it. Bring an old man an ice cream sandwich. You know what I mean? Just let it be a gift. It doesn't have to be this whole thing. I love you. You love sweets. I got you an ice cream sandwich. Let's not overthink this. If you don't want it, who cares? If it's bad for your health, I understand. I'll eat it. I'll have 10 out of 10. I don't care. So I put on a little plate. I bring it to him. And he looks at me just a little bit sideways. And he goes, where did you get this? And I go, I got it at the grocery store. Govinda had to go to the grocery store. And he starts eating it. Just a little bit suspicious. I can tell something's a little bit off. And he's eating it, and he's enjoying it. And he he's not even finished. I think he does finish it. He finishes it, and he says to me, he goes, my friends are digging my grave for me. And I was like, oh, boy. I laugh uncomfortably, and I go, I can't help it. I love you. I can't help it. And he points at me like, bingo, I can't help it. Like you said, more than you realize you said, like, you can't help it. Like, you are stuck in this pattern of Pete-ness, and you're just acting that out, and that's okay. And I forgive you, but you know, I'm also an old man and I shouldn't be eating ice cream. So he eats it. That was the day. We had a wonderful sit after that. That was the time that Honey Avalanche times a million Maharaji was in the room. And just the best. So completely forgot about the ice cream. Nobody, come on, we're the satsang. We can get over an ice cream sandwich. But I do feel a little bit bad for giving an old man who's on all sorts of medication and treatments and stuff to stay alive. I give him all this cholesterol and sugar and all that stuff. So then the next day I'm like, all right, no big deal. I'll just live with that. Matthew and Dossie is like, do you want to say goodbye? And I was like, yes, if I wasn't planning on it, but absolutely. And I had never seen him in his bed. And forgive me if I told you the story before, but he didn't have a shirt on, which was just so sweet and so vulnerable. I didn't have grandparents. I don't have the closest family. So I don't have this type of intimacy. That's like this, you know, I don't know if he's naked or just like a bare old man. And his body is dying at this point. And he's not ashamed. You know how we are. Oh, pull up the sheets and don't. But I walked in and he's exposed and Matthew is like helping him get out of the bed or get up in the morning. And I'm thinking he thinks I'm the schmuck that brought the ice cream sandwich. And he looked at me like 10,000 suns. Like he looked at me with the most intense Ram Dass love I've ever seen in my life. And I should say Maharaji love, Christ love, God's love. And he lit up as if I was, for a regular person, holding a check for $1 billion, like a publisher's clearinghouse oversized check. He lit up like his favorite person in the world walked in. And by, I'd like to point out, this is not for my sake. It had nothing to do with me so much. It was just love. It was just love was bouncing around the room. Love was bouncing. If I had anything to do with it, it was just because it was being mirrored off of me and my love was shining back to him. And it was on Matthew and it was on Dossie. And the whole room was just lighting up like Tesla's power coils. And he just goes, brother, brother. And for what? I can't tell you, for someone, I'm getting emotional, but somebody who doesn't really have that in my blood, in the blood side of my family. I have love, don't get me wrong. But it was so intense and we just held hands, so vulnerable, and we stared at each other in the eyes and just gazed for another minute or two. And he just repeated, brother, and I said back to him, I go, brother, brother, brother. And there's a picture in our house that says brothers. And I could lead you into, it's probably less interesting what I think that meant, but like, I feel like we some parts of us vibrated together. Like there was a kinship there that was special. I always used to go up to him and say showbiz, because I love to appreciate how even the spiritual game has performance elements to it. Like he's got to eat lunch in the mess hall and say hello to the fans. It's basically, you know, we call that a meet and greet. Yeah, like you're doing a meet and greet. So I kind of like to tease him about that. And I think he saw some of my specialness addiction, some of my achiever addiction, and but he looked past it, but also included it and loved both my true self and the Pete, the whole kit and caboodle. Yeah. And boy, it's just up there with one of the greatest things in my life. I was going to frame the photo, but Val was like, he's so close to death that you couldn't, like in a regular house, she's like, you can, but everyone will think it's very weird that you have a photo of a dying man. It looks like a picture of like the streets of India. You know what I mean? It's not like, but when I look at it, it might as well be a picture of my daughter. It's like looking at pure, true love. I don't see the aging spots. That's the grace. That's his grace. For a living, I see aging spots. For a living, I see fat, skinny, tall, black, white, male, female. And in that, it was just a light and another light, and the other lights in the room, just a complete whiteout. And that was the great gift. And that was basically the last time I saw him, except at the mala ceremony where I blew him a kiss, which I had never done before, but it was very bon voyage. It was not intellectual. I'm not saying I had any, we've all been planning for his death for a long time, but it was the last thing I did to him was just blew him a kiss. Mm. And I was like, I don't regret the ice cream sandwich. I hope he enjoyed it.
By the way, you never told me that story, brother, being in the room before. And I'll tell you, I mean, given the years that I've known him, I have never, I swear to you, now it's just my own experience, ever heard him call anyone brother. Ever.
Really?
Ever. No.
Wow.
So that whatever was going on there, it's
even
between
more
you and
special.
Him.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's odd when you said it, yeah. Like, huh? Brother? You know, that's something like, you know, no, absolutely.
Wow. Well, I mean, it means so much to me, and I'm happy to know that because it is this special little love story that I just keep right in my heart. So that detail just makes it even sweeter and more special. Mm. But boy, yeah, there's the picture of my first visit, and Val wrote underneath it, brothers, and that's the one that Leela points at every morning. Mm. It's crazy. Lama Suryadas was like, I think Ram Dass is your guru. And I got really hung up on that for a long time, whether or not he was my guru. And I asked him if he was, and he said, no, of course. He was like, that's not me. But, you know, that be that as it may, the relationship that I have with him and Maharaji is one. You know, I'm sort of a non-dual fellow to begin with. But like Maharaji and Ram Dass have sort of been swirled into a special, I still see them as their own unique things, but there's also a part of me that's like, what's the difference? Like, if I experience Ram Dass as my heart opening, soul enlightening guy, I used to say, oh, he's my Upa guru and Maharaji's my guru. Now I'm just like, there is a guru. I don't need to name it. I don't need to compartmentalize it.
Comportment.
You know what I'm saying.
You need comportment.
No. Comportment. It's not comportment. How
compartmentalize. Compartmentalize.
Yeah. I don't have to get the right language to it. Here's what we know. There is love. There is grace. And this is on my birthday was when I took the LSE. And I kept saying to myself, I was in the bathtub and I kept going, it's so much truer than we know. It's so much truer than we know. It's so much truer than we know. So who cares what we call it? It's so much truer than we'd ever be able to put words to.
Yeah. I mean, when I was talking to Lama the other day, he came up with something that even he was like, wow, that's great. And it was, we were talking about nothing. And he was talking about, yeah, all the Dasses, you know, we're all Dasses. And so you keep going down the Das thing, and then you get down there and there's nothing but Maharaji. Yeah. All the, you know, you go boom, 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 Das, Das,
yeah.
Das, Das.
And I love that. This is maybe one of my proudest things, or just something that I really love is Lama Suryadas calls me Ram Dass Das.
He's fun.
Like, yeah. I was like, that makes me happy. I'll happily be Ram Dass Das.
Yeah. And I do say, I use this thing because I'm from Quebec, right? From Montreal. And I had French Canadian friends, and they weren't perfectly bilingual. So sometimes they couldn't find the right word in English to express what they were trying to say. So they would go, you know, that thing there. And I'll go, oh yeah, that thing there. So for me, there's only one that thing there, you know.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
And when we talk, and just for anybody who one day may hear this, you know, if I'm hard up and I need to put out podcasts, so, you know, I can do that.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
I want to make it clear, and I do this all the time. This is not about... Although Neem Karoli Baba obviously has gone beyond what many of us think of as saint and so on and so forth into the non-dual. You're a non-dual fan? That's all that thing was. That thing there was non-dual. There was no self-referential anything. It was but that thing there is ever present and manifests through all sorts of different things in any moment. That acid, sitting in the bathtub, you know, on that acid trip, sitting in with Ram Dass in that moment, me, the first moment I met him, and, you know, we could go on and on and on the air, you on the airplane with Experiments in Truth. There is only one that thing there. Here's my favorite picture of that thing. I'll show you.
Oh, it's blotting out.
Oh, you know, it's that thing.
Oh, hold it in front of you. Hold it in front of yourself like that.
I'm going to get rid of this god darn mountain here. And you'll see. Hang on. Get rid of it. Okay.
Oh, I love that. And he's saying one.
There's only one. He's either there's only one, or watch the fuck out, asshole.
Yeah. Ram Dass would
you? We never know.
Ram Dass would do that to me too. He was talking about how he's so special. He was joking. He was like, "I was like, how are you?" He's like, "I'm great." He goes, "Everybody loves me." He was sort of saying it tongue in cheek, and then I go, "Okay, so it's okay to be special, like because that's what I do. I try to get people to love me." And he goes, just like Maharaji.
Yeah, yeah.
I also, with non-duality and Maharaji, that would be confusing to me. But I would have some conversations with RD about, say, Eckhart Tolle, who I really love. I think I don't know about other people in the satsang, but I really love Eckhart Tolle. And Ram Dass seemed to believe that what's missing from Eckhart's approach, potentially, if I'm understanding correctly, is that devotional aspect. I think Eckhart would reply to that, that his devotion is to isness itself. But Ram Dass's path was he wants to fall ooey, gooey, sticky, almost romantic love in with a person, with a thing. Richard Rohr says the same thing. He says you can't be in love with an energy. That's why you need Christ. That's why you need Maharaji or whatever it is. Yeah.
That's just bhakti, just a different path. It's nothing to do with anything. And I'll tell you, let me tell you this one story and we'll go. Ram Dass was supposed to do a talk with Eckhart. And so we invited him to lunch at Ram Dass's house, at that house. And before he came, I'm just sitting there talking to Ram Dass and we're both thinking, you know, since Eckhart is kind of, he's from Germany, you know, and we thought, well, they're not the warmest kind of people, you know, but everything he says and everything he writes, Ram Dass really read one of his books, I think. I can't remember which one. Not the Now book. Anyhow. Yeah, that's it. The Good Earth. So he comes and we're like, we were being cynical. I mean, actually one of the very few times that Ram Dass, only a few times could he go there. He wouldn't go there, you know. But he did in this case. It was like, Germanic, a little cold, everything you write, intellectual. So anyhow, Eckhart comes in the house. And he's greeted by Muid, one of Ram Dass's caretakers. And you have probably seen this a million times in your life as in the entertainment business. If somebody comes into the room that's a celebrity of some sort, they'll go to the biggest celebrity in the room and greet them. Everybody else is like, forget about it, right? Well, Eckhart encountered Muid, a caretaker. He was a hippie, 20-odd-year-old kid. And hi, and he embraced him with his energy. And he did that all the way to Ram Dass, okay? And then Ram Dass and I looked at each other and went, and then when he left, I went, Jesus Christ. I blamed him. You were so fucking cynical. Look at him. He's beautiful. And he left. And he became, I was probably I more love of that. It. Yeah. So
I love that. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. So
yeah, I think they're very similar, except for that bhakti element.
Yeah. Right,
but I think they're both non-dual. And when I would talk to Ram Dass, and I know we're closing here, but the thing that I said to him, I was like, I don't get it, Ram Dass. Is it all one, or do I worship Maharaji, or do I love Maharaji? And he goes, it's all one. And love Maharaji.
Yeah. No, that's extraordinarily the core of what this legacy is. It's not even a legacy, because a legacy sounds like something that ain't happening anymore. I don't know what, you know, that word bothers me. It's happening, you know, every moment. But it is definitively, because, you know, we can go on here for hours about this, but the reality that when we were there in India with this being, you know, he did things like Krishnadas and I were sitting with him, and Krishnadas had a notebook, and in the notebook he's just writing quotes and stuff, quotes from Christ, this, that, and the other, Buddhism, you know, Hinduism. But this particular one was Mahamudra, right? The non-dual thingy, okay? And Maharaji said to the translator, translate that for me. So he started to translate it, and Maharaji went, Bahut Accha, very good, right? And then he turned the page, and there was a big picture of Maharaji. Krishnadas had put it glued to the page. And he says to us, who's that? And we're like, very funny. That's you. He goes, nay, Buddha.
Wow.
Buddha, okay. And how do we all end up doing Buddhist practices that Jack, Sharon, and Joseph brought back, you know, Vipassana, all of that, we ended up doing. He didn't tell us to do that. We just ended up, somehow it happened, you know, and he never told us to meditate or anything. And then how do we end up with the Tibetans? Like many of us have taken teachings, you know, starting obviously with Lama Suryadas. There is, and how are we doing all these retreats in Maui that have a contingent of Buddhist teachers, as well as us, the bhakti thingy? You know, and the way that they're blended together so that, yes, absolutely, no self and bhakti, just like this. And that's to me real gyan.
That's what I mean by saying, who cares what I call my guru, as long as I'm feeling and experiencing and working with the guru. It's the ego that wants to label it and claim
just
it anyway.
Do that, and claim it all. Yeah,
I love
that thing there.
That thing there.
Thank you.